Welcome to Deception in the Last Days with your host, Randy Shelton. Randy is a member of the Biblical Discernment and Research Center. He has been studying cults and new religious movements for over 30 years. Join Randy as he discerns the deception going on now in the last days.
I was going to start an in-depth history of liberalism, but, you know, 2 days after my last podcast, I was rummaging through a local rescue mission thrift store and came across an older book that grabbed my attention. Though I wasn't looking for it, it was like the book found me. The title, The Spirit of Synergy, sounded interesting, and as I picked it up, I opened to a chapter titled Serendipity. Well, I began to realize that this wasn't a case of serendipity for me. For those who've been following my previous podcast, I was defining serendipity, this New Age belief and idea, but no doubt an event of God's providence. So in other words, those who've been following my previous podcast, this wasn't the case of serendipity, but no doubt an event of God's providence for me. I would say that God is not only my God and my Lord, but he's my editor, as he helped me to find this book just out of the blue, and it fit right into what I was teaching on at the time. Now, this book was not a New Age book, although as I looked through it, I realized it could have been sold in a New Age bookstore, but rather it was published by a Christian, so-called Christian publisher, Abingdon, which is a liberal United Methodist Church publisher. And now after reading it, I realized a good subtitle for this podcast might be Where Liberalism Can Take You, Part 3. As you know, I've been examining in the lives of various famous liberals and others, or conservatives who turned liberal, people like Paul Tillich, Bishop James Pike, Clark Pinnock, and John Stott. And I had comments on where they went in their life, where liberalism took them, unfortunately took them. So anyway, the author, Robert Keck, was a United Methodist pastor who tells of his spiritual journey that begins with a search for healing, physical healing, and led him to a place that no true Christian wants to be. I felt the Lord wanted me to share some of the high or low lights of his spiritual journey, as it took him where previous authors, Ranald Showers and Samuel Andrews, warned that many liberal apostates would be trending towards in the last of the last days. And of course, I had been quoting from their books, as you will hear in the previous podcasts if you go to the archive, or if you check out what has already been recorded there. I refer to these guys' great books. I won't say much more about that here because of time constraints. And so we begin to analyze this blind pastor leading the blind away from God's revealed written word into an experience-driven, unsafe spiritual place. The book was written in 1978 and chronicles his path that seemed right to him from 1972 on. And of course, I use that expression, what seemed right to him, because I can't help but think of Proverbs. In Proverbs 16:25, there's a way that seems right to a man, but its end is the way of death. And of course, that's speaking primarily of spiritual death, I believe, of course, coming out of God's Word. And there's two places, actually, in the Proverbs where that exact same phrase is given. So very important, even if it was there only once. But we find that on pages 21 and 23, we'll be looking at, as I say, the spiritual journey that he was on, that he chronicled for us, and where it took him ultimately. So on page 21 and 23 of the book, Spirit of Synergy, Robert Keck, he writes, page 21, I was getting desperate. I tried to will the pain away, but that didn't work. I never had been much of a prayer, but I tried to pray the pain away. That didn't work either. I was aware that it isn't very proper theologically to use prayer as a last-ditch aspirin, but I was in a great deal of pain, and I didn't care whether the theologians thought I was proper or not. Then in January of 1973, I had a dream. I was not in the habit of remembering my dreams or of giving them any particular attention, but this one dream came through with extraordinary power. I wrote it down, which was not my custom. Then I promptly forgot about it, which was my custom. Several months later, cleaning out a drawer, I discovered the account of that dream and realized then that it had been a symbolic preview of what had taken place in the intervening months. A fascinating journey through a number of arenas of human discovery, a solution to the severe pain, the discovery of a new concept, and practice of prayer which elicited enthusiasm, motivation, and even discipline from a confirmed non-prayer. And a pastor, I might add, a non-praying pastor. And a change in direction professionally in order to further research and develop this new approach to Christian prayer. The dream went something like this. One morning I was sick, decided to stay home rather than leave for work. I was home alone, and as the day wore on, I began to hear voices down in the basement. Eventually I went to investigate and discovered there was an office in my basement and a man working there. From the equipment in the room and the drawings that were around, it was obvious the man was an architect. Just a second. Okay. As I conversed with him, he revealed to me that he was the architect of my home. The architect told me there was something else to which I had been oblivious. There were more rooms in my home than I had explored. He began giving me a tour. He opened door after door, showing me rooms I had not known were there. The most striking thing I remember about the rooms is that there were no walls, no boundaries, no limits. He says, what I now believe is that the home was symbolic of me, the design known as Bob Keck, that I was to meet in a fresh way the architect, or God, the designer of this space, and that God had created many more rooms in this house than I was aware of, rooms without limits. And then he quotes John 14:2, out of context, of course, in my Father's house are many rooms. He said, what happened in real life was that during the succeeding few months, the architect, quote-unquote, actually gave me a tour of some of those rooms, the untapped resources in the human design. He said, I was simply and rather single-mindedly looking for some relief from pain. Nevertheless, just as the dream predicted, I became so impressed with the new space the architect had showed me and its implications for the Christian life that I did indeed eventually change directions professionally. Let me just say here, he describes his debilitating back pain and his search for healing. Of course, a desire for healing is normal and appropriate, but in the life of a true believer, it may not be God's will to heal. If you remember, Paul the Apostle had a thorn in his flesh that he prayed three times for God to take away, and God did not take it away, but rather said that your strength, you're going to be strong in my strength. This weakness from these thorns will keep you humble, and there's a purpose for you not to be healed. God doesn't always heal. And of course, maybe God was trying to get Mr. Keck's attention and cause him to repent and be saved, you know, through this painful experience. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure the Lord wanted him to be saved. As you'll see, apparently he was not. And it's also a good idea, if you want to pastor people, that you should be a truly born-again Christian, are my comments. As a result of his theological liberalism, he was spiritually vulnerable, and as a result, when he had this dream, he automatically assumed it was from God. And there again, Proverbs 16:25 is worth re-quoting. There's a way that seems right to a man, but its end is the way of death. So he thought this dream was from God. And look where it took him, as we shall see. Liberalism can definitely lead to spiritual death, and it will, in fact. He checked into faith healers and psychic healers, including the false prophet teacher Edgar Cayce, and a man named Arrigo, a guy who also trafficked with demons when in an altered state of consciousness. Arrigo's healing demon claimed to be the spirit of a dead medical student, and I'll mention that in a minute as I read from the book. Of course, this is a similar story as that of Johanna Michelson, who later became a true follower of Christ, as recounted in her book, The Beautiful Side of Evil. Now let's look at page 24 through 29 of Mr. Keck's book. Let's look, first of all, at faith healing that he looked into. The first room that I checked out was faith healing or spiritual healing. After all, I was a minister, wasn't I? I was supposed to be a professional in this faith business, so if faith could heal, why not me? Of course, as we all know, my professional training to be a clergyman did not train me in faith. Well, I would say that's weird. It trained me to intellectualize about faith. Yeah, liberalism. To know about the history of faith in the church and to be able to study the Bible in a scholarly way, you know, using no doubt liberal scholars. Besides, sophisticated Christians are supposed to be skeptical about faith healing, aren't we? Nevertheless, if it would take away that pain, I was willing to be unsophisticated. And I would say, when he said my professional training did not train me in faith, etc., I would say he was really describing himself as a hireling. He was in the ministry that he he was a professional in the as a clergyman, but I believe he was not a true under shepherd of God's flock, but rather a hireling in it for whatever he might get. Now, moving on, he says, it is clear that there is such a profound relationship of body, mind, and spirit, as well as so much prayer in one's belief structure, that it now seems to me terribly naive to say that faith healing is impossible. We will get into these matters later. The fact is that at that particular time in my journey, my skepticism was not satisfied in the faith healing room, so I left still in pain, and the architect took me to the next room. Again, this is a dream. This room was labeled psychic healing. Again, it was with a great deal of skepticism that I entered. Consequently, I entered only intellectually, not through an experiential encounter. This, no doubt, is the main reason why I again failed to find a solution to my pain. You know, it's all about experience, right? And that's actually not. It's all about God's truth and His Word, revealed Word. Nevertheless, this room was not without its impact upon me, and in fact played a significant role in preparing me for what was to come later. Two dramatic psychic healers did catch my attention. They were the focus of a great amount of testing, testing and research. One was Edgar Cayce, a humble photographer who lived from 1877 to 1945 in the United States. Cayce, by the way, I have been to the Association for Research and Enlightenment in Virginia Beach, Virginia, which is Edgar Cayce's association that, you know, is still there. You know, promoting his New Age occultic type beliefs. Anyway, and he has a magazine called Venture Inward. But I visited there some time ago. Just wanted to mention that in passing. So the author of this book goes on to say, Cayce, who had no formal medical training, discovered he could go into a trance and diagnose people's illnesses, even at great distances and without knowing them. He would then prescribe unconventional remedies. The amazing thing about Cayce's work is that in spite of literally thousands of carefully kept records, many enthusiastic followers and even in medical clinics experimenting with the interface between modern medicine and the Cayce readings, conventional medical theorists seem hardly to have ventured a glance at him. Now, by the way, on several other podcasts, I've gone into more detail with Edgar Cayce, so I'd encourage you to listen to some of those. Or all of them, if you have the time. Another incredible story is that of the Brazilian peasant Arrigo. Arrigo was still alive and performing impossible surgical operations because he died some time ago when word of him reached the United States. In 1968, the renowned Dr. Henry Puharich, a physician who had spent many years in medical electronics research, led a team of six doctors to Brazil to study Arrigo. Dr. Puharich and his colleagues watched Arrigo performing surgery without anesthesia or any normal sterilization and confirmed that his patients had no post-operative complications. Dr. Puharich was dumbfounded, and he later wrote some things, which I won't go into here, but I'll go on to say, you know, Mr. Keck says, I will use Arrigo's work to illustrate several extraordinary principles which are demonstrated by numerous psychic healers. While in the psychic healing room, I was impressed by five observations. Blatant challenges to the best of modern medical theory, 2, the frequent use of an altered state of consciousness, and that's key, folks. A holistic approach to healing, number 3. 4, the idea that pain is not an objective phenomenon. And 5, the element of mystery. And I will comment on a few of these observations as we're going along here. First of all, psychic healing, according to Keck's book, challenges conventional medical knowledge. Arrigo never used anesthetics, yet his patients never complained of pain. He never used any process of sterilization, yet nobody suffered any form of infection. He made consistently accurate diagnoses, even using conventional medical terminology, yet he had never had any medical training. There's a red flag. Where to get this information? Arrigo never used any of the equipment that modern medicine uses for diagnosis. He simply would look at the patient for a few seconds and then offer his diagnosis. Also, Arrigo's patients were healed at a rate far surpassing our expectations. No stitches were used by Arrigo to close a wound, and no scars remained. Second, an altered state of consciousness was involved in the healing process. According to Dr. Puharich, Arrigo did not seem to be in a trance state, as Casey was, but he claimed to be receiving all his instruction from a voice speaking into his ear. Arrigo said the voice was that of a deceased German medical student, Adolphus Fritz. So he was in contact with the dead, one way or the other. That's a real no-no when it comes to God's word. You know, that's a very heavy occultic sin that God speaks out strongly against in the Old Testament and in the New Testament. Again, in The Beautiful Side of Evil, Johanna Michelson describes a woman that she worked with who would go into a trance and do these incredible psychic healings. Let's see now. And then fourth, and one more I'll look at. Pain is not an objectively perceived phenomenon. Arrigo could perform a delicate eye operation with a knife without causing the patient any pain, yet no anesthetic was used. Dr. Puharich and his colleagues witnessed hundreds of such operations. All right, now. Okay. Further down the road, in the book, Mr. Keck looks into further down the road. Mr. Keck's doctor suggested hypnosis for his condition, and so I'll be reading from pages 36 and 40 from his book, Keck's book. And here's what we read. Finally, I consistently found biofeedback researchers coming to the edge and frequently into the realm of mysticism and not having a vocabulary adequate to explain the phenomena. Dr. Barbara Brown, one of the earliest and foremost of biofeedback researchers, says, obviously the new horizons of mind revealed to an expanded awareness will be known only when awareness takes us there. We resort to the models of mysticism of an earlier age to describe our moments of altered states of consciousness. We use words like supraconsciousness, hallucinatory, metaphysical, intangibles, our other world. Just as I was becoming fascinated with biofeedback and was wanting to explore it more deeply than for its possible help in alleviating pain, the phone rang. Well, it sounds like serendipity, folks. Not God's providence, though. It was my doctor, Ernie Johnson, a brilliant specialist in physical medicine who had guided the most recent diagnostic work on my back problems. How would you like to try hypnosis? Dr. Johnson inquired. I've got this friend out in Utah, a physician who trains other physicians in the technique of medical hypnosis. He has agreed to teach you self-hypnosis in order to deal with your back pain. Incidentally, years ago, he taught self-hypnosis to Roy Burkhart, then senior minister at First Community Church, and he is intrigued that you are also a minister and at the same church, and I suppose he means United Methodist Church. Hypnosis? I thought that was occult stuff. And my comment would be, yep, you got that right. And yet Dr. Johnson was recommending that I look into it. And Roy Burkhart was taught by the same Dr. Baer. I turned to the architect. Is there a room in this house labeled medical hypnosis? Sure enough, he said there was, right across the hall. I left the biofeedback room knowing that I would be back. But now I had a lot of reading to do in preparation for my trip to see Dr. Baer. So my comments, of course, would be this, and we'll be looking at an article written by Martin Bobgan. He and his wife, Martin and Debra Dree, have written a lot of great books, and one booklet they wrote is Hypnosis and the Christian, and I recommend it. It's probably out of print, but I think you can still find it on Amazon or wherever. And you know, this booklet was very helpful because, you know, one of my heroes in the faith, Dr. Walter Martin, who wrote the classic Kingdom of the Cults, was human and I think made a few mistakes along the way. I listened to a tape series when I was at Bible College from the library there, and it was the Kingdom of the Occult, and Martin was describing other, you know, false teachings and beliefs and ideas. But when it came to hypnosis, he differentiated between occult hypnosis, which he claimed, of course, was wrong, but the difference between that and medical hypnosis, which at that time he was referencing dentists who would use hypnosis to put people under and then do dental work. And he didn't have a problem with that. And that's unfortunate because, and I still recommend Walter Martin, but I have to give it that caveat, you know, that disclaimer that, you know, none of us are perfect. And in this area, I think Walter was wrong. And that is a pretty serious issue. So anyway, getting back to this book before I go on to the Bobgan article. Okay, hypnosis, according to Keck, he says, is a state of increased awareness facilitated by the concentration of the deeply relaxed state of mind. Besides realizing that I had many false assumptions regarding hypnosis, I began to see a deep underlying similarity with some of the other disciplines I had been studying. And of course, needless to say, I don't agree with his ideas about hypnosis, obviously, much of anything that's in this book. The linkage of mind and body facilitated by the power of our imagination in a deeply relaxed state. The roots of hypnosis go back to the 18th century physician Franz Anton Mesmer, from whom we get our word mesmerized, although Mesmer called his techniques animal magnetism. The power, the commission concluded, was in the person's own imagination. My hesitation about trying hypnosis vanished when I learned I would not be unconscious. On the contrary, I would be aware of what was happening and could stop it at any time. So I got on the plane and headed for Salt Lake City. No sooner had I met Dr. Baer than he started throwing ski equipment in his van and talked about skiing. But I don't know how to ski. He said, I'll teach you. Okay. What kind of doctor is this? I thought. What, a sadist? What have I got myself into? He seems to be a nice guy. He's a friend of Dr. Johnson's. He has a very nice wife and family. He even took me to hear the Mormon Tabernacle Choir. He must be all right. Yeah, he took me to go hear a cult Tabernacle Choir. Anyway, obviously no discernment there. That night, the options were clear, he says. I was going to get some success from this hypnosis training, or I was going to suffer great pain, or I was going to die of fear. There was intensive work on the techniques of hypnosis for the next several days, in between skiing, of course. We worked on relaxation, we worked on concentration, we worked on imaging as clearly and as powerfully as I could, that each exhalation would flush out the pain from my body. Then a miracle happened. The pain was gone. Dr. Baer was the bearer, pun intended, of a miracle. He goes on to say, and I'll close his book for this week with these comments, and then I'll read the article by Mr. Bobgan. What is this, Keck, he said to himself, a liberal who has always tried to demythologize miracles, talking about a real miracle? Yes, real. The pain was really diminished. You see, his liberal penchant for demythologizing the Bible and miracles and is experiencing a lying sign and wonder and healing that he calls a real miracle. You see, he was wide open and vulnerable to this deception of Satan, this lying sign and wonder that the devil did, here are his demons, in deceiving the man. And I put in my little notes here, yes, Mr. Liberal, confession is good for the soul. You know, and I'm saying that tongue in cheek, you know, he's like, oh, you know, I'm supposed to be a liberal and I'm talking about a miracle. Well, he is a liberal, was a liberal. I don't know if the man's still alive, but, his miracle was a counterfeit miracle, needless to say. Now, let me move along with the time that I have. I should have enough time to finish this excellent article by Martin and Deidre. This is from, by the way, their website, Psychoheresy Awareness Ministries. And I recommend them, and they've written many books as well. So let me hurry through this. We got about 2.5 pages, and I think I can make it. I might go a little over today. Hypnosis, medical, scientific, or occultic. This was written June 1st, 2001. The words most used by those who support hypnosis for Christians are medical and scientific. These words not only provide prestige, but also a feeling of safety. When the word medical comes up, the guard goes down. Any practice labeled medical and therefore scientific is an open sesame to the saints. Those who encourage hypnosis for Christians rely upon this questionable label of science to support its use. However, Donald Hebb says in Psychology Today, the state of the science, that hypnosis has persistently lacked satisfactory explanation. At the present time, there is no agreed-upon scientific explanation of exactly what hypnosis is. Psychiatry professor Thomas Satz describes hypnosis as the therapy of a fake science. We cannot call hypnosis a science, but we can say that it has been an integral part of the occult for thousands of years. E. Fuller Torrey, a research psychiatrist, aligns hypnotic techniques with witchcraft. He also says hypnosis is one aspect of the yoga techniques of therapeutic meditation. And by the way, these two doctors he quotes, the last two, I've heard Dave Hunt also quote them many times. Dave Hunt's one of my heroes. And they're not Christians, to my knowledge. They're secular psychiatrists, psychiatry professor, etc. Medical doctor William Kroger states, the fundamental principles of yoga are, in many respects, similar to those of hypnosis. To protect the scientific label for hypnosis, he declares, yoga is not considered a religion, but rather a science to achieve mastery of the mind and cure physical and emotional sicknesses. Then he makes a strange confession. There are many systems to yoga, but the central aim, union with God, is common to all of them and is the method by which it achieves cures. Many medical doctors use the energy centers of yoga to alleviate physical diseases. Kroger and William Fessler say the reader should not be confused by the supposed differences between hypnosis, Zen Buddhism, yoga, and other Eastern healing methodologies. Although the ritual for each differs, they are fundamentally the same. Thus, the word medical may include much more than one might suppose. Nevertheless, some in the church have advocated hypnosis as long as it is in the hands of a trained professional, especially a medical doctor. A person who desperately needs help for some long-term difficult problem and has tried other cures is vulnerable. He may grab at any implied or direct promise for help that comes along, and especially from a medical doctor. This is the very predicament in which many Christians find themselves. Few people realize that medical hypnosis is any hypnosis used for medical purposes. Medical doctors use both hypnotic regression, which also includes past lives regressions, and I'll say a little bit about that a little later, and deep hypnosis. At one point in hypnotic regression and at what depth in hypnosis should a Christian discontinue hypnotic treatment? Some medical doctors use a medical hypnosis which encourages a type of disassociation. The individual becomes an observer of his own body and helps in diagnosis and treatment. They have the hypnotized patient mentally go into the appropriate area of the body to do repairs, to help medicine or help medicine be effective, or to see the healing process at work. Would this type of medical hypnosis be acceptable to a Christian? The following is a description of Jack Swartz, who has conducted experiments at the Menninger Foundation using a visualization technique equivalent to hypnosis to heal a cut hand. First, he instructs, use your mind to see yourself sitting there. Look at your hand in your mind, separate the hand from the body, and let it move away from you, growing larger and larger. Then, in your mind, rise and walk toward it. Halfway there, look back at your body in the chair. Tell it to do a task, like crossing its legs. If it complies, face the hand. Move toward it, entering it through a door. Visualize yourself inside, looking at the cut. See yourself repairing the cut with glue or tape. Continue working visually until the cut is repaired. Now, I actually heard Jack Swartz on Focus on the Family years ago, James Dobson, the psychologist program, and he had a bizarre mystical medical healing on that incident as well, which I don't remember the details, don't have time for it now anyway. Come out and walk back to your body. When you look at your at the large mind-body hand off in the distance and you see it, it is healed. It moves towards you and slips back into place, ending the visualization. Thank your body and picture it as a whole and full of joy. We raise the following questions about the use of hypnosis by a medical doctor. Now, this is Bob Gensink talking here. How can one tell the long-range spiritual effect of even a well-meaning medical doctor's use of hypnosis on a Christian patient? Would an MD with an anti-Christian or occult bias in any way affect a Christian through trance treatment? How about the use of a medical hypnotherapist who belongs to the Satanist church? Good question. What about an MD hypnotherapist who uses past or future life therapy as a means of mental emotion or physical relief? These and other questions need to be answered before subjecting oneself to such treatment, even in the hands of a medical doctor or psychologist. Past life regression, and I saw a guy doing this at USC in South Carolina when I went to a Bible college in that city, and he was doing past life regressions where supposedly a person goes back before birth and can identify with earlier lives, and even a voice can come and speak through them and helps to supposedly prove reincarnation that they lived in another body. Don't have time to extrapolate much on that, so I'll move on. If indeed hypnosis may result, except that it's bad, stay away from it. If indeed hypnosis may result in occult healing, there are potential serious consequences to consider. John Weldon and Zola Levitt say, we would expect that most, if not all, of those who are occultly healed are likely to suffer either psychologically or spiritually in some way. Weldon has written many excellent books, including the Encyclopedia of New Age Beliefs, by the way. Kurt Cook, in his book, Demonology Past and Present, states, he believes that the power behind occult healing is demonic, that such healing serves as an impediment to a person's spiritual life, and that the damage is immense. Weldon and Levitt also point out that occult practices do provide healing, but that the cure is often worse than the original illness. In conclusion, psychic healing is not a part of any natural or latent capacities of man. It is a distinctly supernatural, spiritistic power and carries grave consequences both for those who practice it and those healed by it. Those who practice it may have no indication that spirit entities are the real source of their power, and that does not reduce their own responsibility for the spiritual and psychological destruction of those they heal. There is also a high price to pay when contacting forces that are alien to God. Cook also says, although certain Christian workers believe that some types of healing, mesmerism, we saw that in the other man's book, a form of hypnotism, are dependent on neutral rather than mediumistic powers, I would say that I have personally hardly ever come across a neutral form that is of mesmerism or mediumism. Many years of experience in this field have shown me that even in the case of Christian mesmerizers, the basic mediumship has always come to the surface in the end. Are people in the church being enticed to enter the twilight zone of the occult because hypnosis is now called science and medicine? Let those who call the occult science tell us what the difference is between medical and occultic hypnosis. And let those Christians who call it scientific explain why they also recommend that it be performed only by a Christian. If hypnosis is science indeed, why the added requirement of Christianity for the practitioner? There's a scarcity of adequate long-term studies of those who have been hypnotized, and there have been none which have examined the effect on the individual's resulting faith or interest in the occult. Before hypnotism becomes a new panacea from the pulpit, followed by a plethora of books on the subject, its claims, methods, and long-term results should be considered. Arthur Shapiro has said, one man's religion is another man's superstition, and one man's magic is another man's science. Hypnosis has become scientific and medical for some Christians with little proof of its validity, longevity of its results, or understanding its nature. Because there are so many unanswered questions about its usefulness and so many potential dangers about its usage, Christians should shun hypnosis. God bless you all. I hope you'll join me next week. Good night.